From a competition to a pleasure hunt and all the stops in between, we cover it all here at Coon Hunting Media.
If you are looking for a reliable, safe, clean, and comfortable transporter for your dog, then you need to contact Muddy River Transport. They offer a premium dog hauling experience where your dog's safety and comfort are top priority, and they will go above and beyond the competition. They use their advanced ozone treatment and sterilization machine to thoroughly clean their van at the completion of each run. You can rest assured that your dog will be traveling in an environment that is clean, safe, and hygienic. Their van is climate controlled. All kennel spaces are comfortable, spacious, safe, and secure. Your dog will be comfortable and stress-free during transport. The drivers that will be moving your dog are trained professionals with lots of experience in this field. They are friendly and dedicated that your dog's safety and comfort are top priority throughout their trip. Communication is top-notch. You can rest assured that you will get route updates, dog check-ins, and projected times of arrival, all while taking into consideration your busy schedule. If you are looking for a transport option for your dog and want a stress-free experience with the confidence that your dog will be in a clean, safe, hygienic environment, then call Muddy River Transport today to give your dog the best ride of their life. They believe their customers' dogs deserve to be treated as if they were their own. They are not just dog haulers, they are active houndsmen. They hunt just like you do and participate in all the major events. Remember the mission statement: travel safe, travel clean, travel comfortable. Every trip, every time with Muddy River Transport. Contact us on Facebook at Muddy River Transport Group or call 1-402-274-7558.
Coon Hunting Media is proudly sponsored by Little T Squatters. Them are the words every competition hunter loves to hear. Your winning coon has just been found. Little T Squatters, owned and designed by Tim Tempton, has set the bar for high quality, dependable, and unmatched performance. From pleasure hunters to extreme competitors, he covers it all with his five elite models. Original Little T, the Triple Threat, the Double Shot, the Pro Series, and the newly designed Bell Ringer. If you want to enter the woods with confidence, contact his office at 423-562-5333 and become elite.
Saddle Up Canine Cryo is owned by Mr. Bill Scheninger. Bill is located in Delta, Ohio. Don't miss out on the opportunity to keep that special stud dog forever. His services include semen collection, freezing, side-by-side shipping, and semen storage. Bill is also the owner of one of the best-known plot kennels in the country, Saddle Up Plots. Saddle Up Plots is home to UKC, PKC, AKC, WTDA, Grand Knight Champion, PR Saddle Up Lazarus. Lazarus accomplished the following accolades in 2021. He was UKC World Champ Plot, Plot Days Isaiah Kid Winner, Purina Breed Winner, Autumn Oaks Breed Champion, APA Breed Days Winner. Fresh chilled and frozen semen is available. Contact Bill directly for all pricing and services information for Canine Cryo and Saddle Up Plots. Bill's phone number is 419 467 7689. Saddle Up Plots, making plots rise again.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Coon Hunting Media Podcast. Glad you're joining us, and today we are going to be sitting down with well-known hunter, Mr. Cheyenne Cummings. And before we get started, Johnny's going to come to us with our verse of the week.
It says, "Seeing ye have purified your souls and obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unfeigned love of the brethren, see that ye love one another with a pure heart fervently, being born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible, by the word of God, which liveth and abideth forever. For as all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man as the flower of grass, the grass withereth, and the flower thereof falleth away. But the word of the Lord endureth forever. And this is the word which by the gospel is preached unto you."
Houndsman Advantage is a proud sponsor of the Coon Hunting Media Podcast. Houndsman Advantage is the premier digital scoring solution for the competition hunter. The app gives the necessary tools to score in competition or track your dog's hunting performance while on pleasure hunts. Imagine the benefit of having this tool at your fingertips on every hunt. Some of the features included within the app are a scorecard view, a summary view with tree timers for up to four dogs. There is no more calculating split strike and tree points manually. They are preloaded within the app. Cumulative scores will be automatically totaled with current plus, minus, circle, or deleted points after each scoring situation. The app includes the full rules for UKC, PKC, Pro Sport, and AKC. A search function is included, which allows you to find specific rules instantly. The app allows you to scratch or withdraw a dog at any time during the cast. When the app is running under the UKC rules, it will automatically scratch a dog that has reached the scratchable amount of minus points. The app includes a kennel function for personal information such as registration numbers and entry cards. You can also store analytics on your dog's accuracy, win percentages, and much, much more. Even though the app has been tailored with the competition hunter in mind, the pleasure hunter has not been left out. You can set up pleasure hunts that track up to two dogs' performance at a time. You can keep totals on accuracy, whether good or bad. This will be broken down to the game scene, dens, slicks, and so on. When you register on the app, you are given a one-week free trial. Within the app, navigate to the news and update section. There, you will find a video that will walk you through how to use the entire app. Don't lose a cast because you didn't know the score or you had the wrong score. Give yourself the advantage, the Houndsman Advantage. The app is available for download at the App Store and Google Play.
Cajun Outdoors is the official light sponsor of Coon Hunting Media Podcast. Cajun Lights has been in business since 1986, making them one of the oldest hunting light companies in the industry. Any listeners from this area knows the level of quality and reputation that came with the Cajun Light. Cajun Outdoors is quickly reclaiming their spot at the top of the modern hunting light industry. Their recipe for success is listening to customers' needs and wants. If you're looking at a Cajun light and don't see exactly what you want, pick up the phone and call the owner, L.W. Nixon. He will make the light that you want become a reality. Customization is not a problem with Cajun lights. You don't have to worry about cheap foreign parts from box stores. There are no worries about tariffs. All their lights are made right here in North Carolina in the great USA. The key mission statement of Cajun lights is, when you as a customer spend your hard-earned money with us, we'll stand behind what we sell. We will be here for years to come. Their current light lineup is the premium light that is tailored specifically to the competition coon hunter, the Cajun Blinder. It comes with a choice of either bright white or natural main beam with four levels of brightness. Super bright dual white walk lights with spot flood combo for great visibility while walking and searching. Super bright red light with high-low option. Super bright amber with high-low option. Intense bright green laser. Burn time on high is 5 to 6 hours. Clip mounted for easy removal and changing of various hats. weighs 18 to 21 ounces, depending on hat style. The other quality lights they include are the Cajun Rogueroo, the Cajun Bayou 2, the Cajun Micro Gator. All Cajun lights come with a 2-year warranty along with a lifetime labor warranty. Most of the guys at Coon Hunting Media have ran Cajun lights since childhood. Cajun lights, try one and experience an elite light from a brand that has been around for years. Call them at 888-773-3080 or visit their website at cajunlights.com.
Briar Creek Kennels, feed and hunting supply store, owned by Chris Girth. Located in Hemera, Indiana, Briar Creek carries all your pet supplies and is the headquarters for all your hunting dog gear. Never get caught in the dark. They carry Outlaw Lights, Superior Lights, and their own Briar Creek Light brand. They are an authorized Garmin and Dogtra dealer. They offer hunting apparel by Yoder Nylon, Southside Hunting Gear, Dan's, Razor, and their own Briar Creek branded gear. Dog boxes include Old Dry Pond and Diamond Deluxe, AGM thermals, engraved nameplates, dog collars, and leads are just a few of the many other offerings you can get from Briar Creek. Visit the store in person or shop online at www.shopbriarcreek.com. or check them out at the major events. Their direct business number is 812-383-9489. Briar Creek Kennels Feed and Hunting Supply Store.
All right, folks, we're here with Cheyenne Cummins. We've been talking just a little bit off air. And I actually drew Cheyenne a couple years ago in Miami, Oklahoma at BBCHA Fall Roundup. And I like to say I thank you for his judging, the way he calls it straight as the air, the way it is, and the way it ought to be. I'm thankful for that. Competition hunting gets a bad enough rap sometimes from people that don't know exactly what's going on, but I'd like to say I'm thankful for Cheyenne being the man that he is.
Thank you.
Good to have you here with us tonight, Cheyenne.
Yeah, and nice to be here, guys.
That's one thing that you've, any competition hunter, especially when you're running on the big circuit, when you go to a hunt, everybody knows who Cheyenne is. But the one thing is, two things, he's packing a winner, and he knows you're going to get done right if Cheyenne's on the cast. Mm-hmm. Whether he's winning, losing, it don't matter. It's going to be called straight.
Yeah, that's what we was just talking about there for a second when Johnny, ahead of the call, I mean, you know, you got a guy here that's winning trucks and worlds and everything else, and he was the first one to plus your coons up when you're walking into a cast. So that's integrity.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, everybody's dog has bad nights, and they all have good ones, and whatever one's having a good night should win the cast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So boys, where are we going to dig in here and pick his brain? Because he's had a lot of winners, and he could probably talk for a while about it because he's won more than we have all combined. So which dog you want to start with, boys?
Well, I guess his most well-known would be Stogie.
You want to start there?
World champion.
That's fine with me.
One that wins a world championship. That's pretty prominent.
Where'd you come up with Stogie at? Did you raise him, or was he one of y'all bought young dog?
I had him as a pup, and he was one of them that I sold when I was young. And a friend of ours, Blake Roten, ended up with the dog. Well, him and his uncle, Brian Roten. And I drew him in a cast. And I told Ronnie Smith, Ronnie was looking for a dog. I said, hey, you better go look at that dog. I said, he needs to hunt it up. But I said, that pup's got the tools to win, I think. Well, Ronnie went with him. Ronnie just went and bought the dog. Well, he gets him home and hunts him the first night. And he calls me and wanted nobody to go partners. He said he's going to hunt too rough. He said, if you want to go partner. So I bought in. And we went from there. And then Ike Rainey bought in. So Ronnie and Ike Rainey both are partners with me on Stogie.
Did Ike buy in before the world championship?
About probably a month before the world hunt, he bought in, yes.
That's pretty good timing.
Yeah, that's pretty good timing.
He had good timing there.
What's some of your thoughts on the dog? Obviously, he was the real deal if he's able to take it all the way to the finals in a world.
Stogie's biggest deal, he's a low-end strike dog as a rule, but the longer they're gone, the better chance he's got of getting struck high. He's a very – he moves as good as anything I've ever hunted with. And that's how he wins a lot of these casts. He just out-hustles the dogs. You know, he usually don't stay a lot on the ground. He's more of an ambush type. Now, you hunt him in these hills, the dog will trail a coon, but you put him on edges and he's just going to run the edges. He changes his hunting style altogether different. But Stogie's a very accurate dog, but he should be because he only messes with his type of coon. You know, he ain't going to get in there and grub up an old bad track like Shaq would. Stogie's more of an, he's going to strike his type of coon. He's usually not on the ground long.
I got you. So kind of putting it in reverse a little bit, you said Stogie, he's out of Shaq, correct?
Yes, sir.
What kind of style was he? Was he more of like a Stogie style or?
Shaq, all these dogs are very, very hard hunting dogs. Shaq was a real wild young dog, real junky. There was a lot of nights I just drove off and left him running and come back. And once he went to making some trees and having coons, he pretty much quit all of it on his own. And I didn't have to do much work as far as breaking him. But Shaq was a big wild hunting dog too. Yeah.
So is that something that we talk about this all the time in our podcast? Because where we're at here, we have, and it sounds like you got mountains there too, but we have hard hunting, and and that's our biggest thing is finding the dogs that have enough hunt. They got to be exactly like kind of like you mentioned it. They got to be wild hunters. They got to be a little bit crazy to ever kind of fit in here and be satisfactory.
That's me. When I'm picking a pup, I want the junkiest, wildest pup of the group. And I'm lucky where I live. I get a lot of pups from them, so I can kind of time they're big enough to hunt. I can pretty much already tell you if I'm even interested in starting them or not.
What steps do you usually take as far as starting a dog, Cheyenne?
Usually when they get up big enough to run loose, I just turn them loose, and I got dogs here that are running in treed all the time that I just let run loose. And once them pups go to making trees, I pin them up and start them. You know, I don't like to leave them loose once they start getting treed. But as far as running junk, I'm not a shocker. I hardly ever put a shocking collar on a dog coon hunting. I'll use it around the house, but I hardly ever put a shocker on a dog coon hunting. It's just too easy to use, and I would run more than I make.
Yeah, you get a little frustrated. It's easy to hit that button on them.
Very easy, yes. So I'm not much of a shocker. If I've got something that I want to work on one, I'll put a shocker on them for that one reason, but that's usually the only time.
Yeah, well, me and a buddy of mine was talking the other day. We was talking about breaking a dog off a deer, and he's talking about trying to do it. I told him, I said, that's just my thought. I don't think I would take the dog coon hunting if I was going to try to break him off a deer. I'd take the dog deer hunting.
Yes.
And I'd put him in a situation where I know that I seen the deer in the field, and when he started driving them out of the field, then I'd put a stop to it then. That I wouldn't take him, because, I mean, some of them boar coons, they run like a deer.
They do.
I mean, they do.
And a lot of people are shocked. That, in my opinion, a lot of people shock young dogs on coons. There's just some dogs that's better track dogs than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right, though. I had an uncle growing up hunting together all the time, and my dad refused to let him carry the transmitter portion of a shocking collar because that's what he told him. He said, you run more of the dogs, the good dogs that we've had over the years because you're too trigger happy.
Yes. And in my opinion, too, if I do shock a dog, I don't shock that dog to come back to me. I don't just burn him up. I'll hit him, and I'll just keep hitting him a little harder until he quits that track because I want him to go looking for a coon when he quits. I don't want him to look for me, so I don't never burn a dog up enough where they'll come back to me. I just shock them a little, and if they're still running, I'll hit a little harder.
Yeah.
But because I don't want to shock them so bad that they're blowed up and come looking for me. I want them to go looking for a coon.
That's a good point.
I've told many of people before, and it's hard for them to wrap their head around it, but the best way to break a dog is cocking that rifle.
That's right. Well. Most good dogs, no matter how junk they are, if you go to rolling coons out, they're going to quit 90% of it on their own.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and you've still got that drive there. that you never lost while trying to break them off that jump.
That's it. A lot of people break dog spirits by shocking them too much, and they'll take a lot of that hunt and hustle out of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned it a minute ago, so I'm going to assume that's kind of your mentality with it. You said you many times left shack out doing stuff, so you're one of those that when they're young, you just ride it out, and that's
I don't go to burning them up, and I just if they want to run, I'll just go on coon hunting.
Right, and that's one of the things we try to put some thoughts through. We try to tailor a lot to young hunters that's getting in and stuff, and young kids are the world's worst to want to do shocking and stuff like that as far as that goes. But patience is a big deal, and obviously yours is work because you've done a lot of winning.
You got to have patience if you're going to hunt young dogs.
That's why I like to send them somewhere else. I lose my patience a lot of times when I shouldn't. So,
well, I mean, good especially points. About like where we live, though. We've said it many times in this podcast. I mean, what rip didn't get struck last night till 0.65, 0.66. Yes. I mean, when we're starting young dogs here, they gotta be a little wild.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's I'm lucky where I live. I've got real coon hunting within a 40 minutes of me. Where I hunt through the week, I get up so early, I hunt around the house, and 90% of the time when you cut a dog, it's going to be a half, three quarters before they ever get struck.
Okay.
But now, like where they have the blue tick roundup, that's 25 minutes from me. You know, I can drive over in them big bottoms and hunt, or I can go north of me 45 minutes and be the same kind of hunting as I got in Illinois. Corn, beans, Milo, big bottoms. So I can be in coons pretty quick on the weekends if I'm not at a hunt.
That makes it nice on tuning dogs up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep.
And you got a little bit of everything. Like you said, you got thinner coons where they have to go work after them. You got more coons in other spots. And we've seen that in our ventures going here and going there. But you had to expose those dogs to a little bit of everything. You got to take them to water if you can. And
yes. Yep.
Get them acclimated.
Yeah, and I'm one, like tonight, I'm going north, and there's a lot of coons up there. I mean, it's nothing to go up there and 3, 8, 9, 10 coons. But I don't like hunting that all the time because I feel like it makes your dog lazy. They get to looking for a coon every 100 or 200 yards. And if you hunt them up there pretty solid and you bring them back here where I live, it seems like it takes them a little bit to get that drive back to go find a coon.
Yeah, you probably spend a little more time in the thinner coon where you are. Then when you go up there, it makes it more like a clinic is the way I like to look at it. That's good points.
Yeah, but myself, I like all my hunting buddies like the flat grounds, and I like hunting hills. I think you make a better dog hunting in the hills where it's rougher. You make your dog a little tougher. But everybody I hunt with, they like to go to the flat ground, so I got to go with them some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what's your take on the hills? I've not really paid attention to exactly how the land is out there where you're at. I mean, you guys got pretty good mountains, or is it just kind of small rolling hills?
No, right where I live, it's kind of both, you know, pretty much rolling hills. But you can go north south of me about 12, 15 miles, and now it's good hills.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like the Boot Hills of Missouri. You know, it's pretty much straight up and down, big rocks. It's rough hunting. But I feel like you can, if a dog can go down there and tree coons consistent, you can go tree coons anywhere consistent.
Yeah, that's good. That's why we look at it here. And I don't like walking in the hills.
No. From that part. I hunt them a lot by myself. You know, especially if I've got a young dog I'm singling out. I can get in there and stay for hours. There's no houses. And I can work on recutting and get a lot more done.
Now, on young dogs in general, I got a question. So you, like I said, we keep saying it over and over. You've had the success, so we can pin you on that. If you're working and you got a young dog singled out, and for instance, like Stogie that you took on to win the world with, what kind of, for the listeners, what kind of dedication does it take to get that dog ready for that?
You know, if you're going to run the road and you want to compete, it's just like an athlete. These other guys that's winning, Michael Ward, Dustin Weed, and all them boys, they're hunting 5, 6, 7 nights a week. So, you know, where I work, I hunt a lot. But through the week, I only get to make a dump or two. but I only work 4 days. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, if I'm not at a hunt, I'll hunt from dark till daylight.
Okay.
You know, and I'm a firm believer. If there's two dogs in a tree, I never shoot a coon out.
Okay.
I don't want that dog to ever think I'm rewarding him for being with a dog. I don't care if a dog comes from cover, I'm still not going to kill that coon.
Okay. So for him to get that reward on it, he has to have had it by himself.
He's got to be there by himself. Yes. He had to tree it, nothing coming cover him. Stogie's one. I've probably not shot a coon to Stogie in 3 months. He's one that. He doesn't operate no better or no worse with or without him. But you just kind of got to go on your dog, too. You know, you go to kill them very many times, but a lot of them, they want to go back to trees and they'll start making mistakes. But I'm still one that I never kill a coon with two dogs.
That's a good point for the listeners out there to be. It's kind of the mindset of what are you going to do? Are you just out here pleasure hunting, or you want to drive toward top-level competition hunter?
Yes.
Okay. What's next?
Oh, yeah.
Moving to Shaq next.
Talking about how many pups does Shaq have on the ground?
Shaq's probably got, I'd say, around 800 now.
Wow.
So he's been pretty consistent in the stud pen.
Yes. Yes.
I would rank that kind of numbers. I mean, you're talking numbers of what we expected, the top stud dogs to get back 40 years ago. As a whole, you don't see those kind of numbers on any stud dog nowadays. So you've got to have something special.
Yeah, he's. I've been lucky. He seems to be crossing good on most of them, and there's a lot of good young dogs out of him.
What do you like cross? What would you rather cross him on bloodlines wise?
Me, I'm big on bone collector females and track men females. I like to breed them females. They cross good on Mafia, which was Shaq's dad, and they cross good on Shaq.
You like that? Do you think they have? I'm just asking because I don't know a whole lot about Walker dogs, but do you like the nose on those better?
The pups out of them crosses just seem to start quick, and there seems to be more top quality pups out of them type of females.
Okay. So you're seeing a higher percentage of the litters that are, it's not a one-hit wonder of a litter, it's most of the litter.
Yes, yes. And I've got a female here, she's a night champion gyp out of Zeb 3 semen. I've crossed her twice on Shaq and got another litter on the ground right now, and that's the only Zeb 3 female that I've bred, and they have been phenomenal. One of them, she got... I can't remember. She placed in the baby stakes this year. She's like 9 months old out there. I sold her to Barry Wack, a doctor in Iowa, but she was an unreal pup. Kurt Ehring's got one of them. You know, Carrie Bennett's got one of them. There's some of them pups around that other stud dog guys have got. They're nice pups.
No doubt they're going to incorporate that somewhere down the road in their line of dogs.
Yes. Yes, Carrie's got. Carrie Bennett's got two out of Stogie, and that's the only cross I made on Stogie. Well, he's got some little pups on the ground now, but I just went to breeding him. But we bred him to the Jenna female that won the world hunt, and Kurt Ehring's got two females out of that, and I'm sure he's going to breed it back to his dogs. Which Stogie goes back to track man, so that helps Kurt too.
Speaking on pups and stuff, we all know everybody that's raised pups and stuff, they know what sells, early starters. Early starters sells stud dogs. But you, do you like early starters or do you like a little later starter pups?
They got to start here pretty early because I usually keep so many pups. If they don't start early, I sell them because I'm going to mess with what's ready.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when you're doing early starters, what do you consider something you're satisfied with age-wise to be showing good interest and stuff?
You know, if there are a lot of pups around here, you know, which I start letting them run loose about 3 months old, and if they're not running, treeing pretty good at 6, 7 months old, running loose here at these other dogs, I'm probably going to pin them up, turn something else loose.
Okay.
You know, I'm not going to wait on them for no 12, 13 months to do something.
Okay, that's good information.
Well, I mean, your time's worth money, and when you've got pups that are running and treeing, there's really no use of waiting on that one pup that may not even ever make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't know. That's the little female that placed the baby stakes. She was 8 months old when I sold her, and that gift I know would treat 50 or more coon by herself already.
At eight months old.
Yeah, she was an unreal pup. I mean, there's not very many of them like that at all. I've not owned very many of them like that. But, you know, that's just, I like one to start with.
Yeah, that's impressive. What's some other stuff about, so like, let's talk a little bit more, give us some more details on Shaq, because obviously he's a dominant reproducer. Yes. And stud dog. What's some things that stand out that will make him special to you from now on?
His personality is the main thing. He's just a friendly dog. It don't matter who it is. Anybody can handle him. Anybody can catch him. He's just got a lot of personality. But Shaq was, I wish I could rein him like I got a lot more time. My kids are all grown now. You know, Shaq's 12 years old.
Is he 12?
If I'd had Shaq the last 5-6 years as a young dog, there's no telling what he could have won. I mean, he was a good hound, you know, real accurate. He's a dead loner, but most of all, and I don't have to have no hard tree dog, but if we're running a coon together, I want my dog in front. I like a real track dog, and that's the main thing I look for in anything that I keep. I like something that can run a coon. You know, I can take a 40, 50 bark a minute tree dog if they can really run a coon and don't bog down. And a good track dog, they're going to be accurate.
Yeah. So you're one of those, you put track over tree as far as ability always.
Every time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I agree with you. That's just curious how you thought on that one.
Every time. A lot of these young kids that hunt with me, they want these pups to blow up, you know, with, as soon as they take them, I tell them I'd rather a pup go to running a coon before he goes to treeing. I said most of them pups go to treeing quick, never do learn how to run a track because they're always looking to get treed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's you talking about reproducing and some of the things about him. I'm just flipping through looking on his page that's on Facebook, and obviously yeah. You just said 800 and something pups now. So this is old. This data I got is not new. He had 711 at this time. And he had $33,000 won on his own at that point. But he, at that point in time, he had $570,000 of pup winnings. And you got a couple hundred more pups on the ground now.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I could tell you the exact number, but he's somewhere between $800,000 and $900,000 in pup earnings.
I was going to guesstimate he's pushing close to the $1 million mark.
Yeah, he should hit it. You know, Shaq. He's 12, but he's got a lot of them pups that his numbers are 2 years and younger.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of young stuff out there out of Shaq.
I mean, they may be a couple more world champions coming out of there. You don't know at this
point. I hope, and I don't care who owns them.
You was behind making them. That's what matters.
You got any in the pen that you're hopeful for out of Shaq?
I keep selling them. I got a bad habit. I keep selling them, but no, I got a female heir out of Shaq and a Frogger dip. She's 6.5 months old. Matter of fact, I'm going to take her tonight for the first time. She's I really like her running loose here. She's got a big mouth, real looking female. I think she's going to be all right, but time will tell.
Yeah. She's a big leggy female.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a big leggy, and for me, I like a white dog, whiter the better, but she's a blanket back, blood red-headed. She's a real good-looking gyp, but yeah, she's going to be a little leggier, bigger type. She's got a male dog head on her.
Speaking on Shaq and what, like, the style of dogs he's reproduced, you said Stogie, he's a lower-end strike dog. I've drew some Shaq dogs, and a lot of the Shaq dogs I've drew, they've been quick strike dogs. Is that what he's throwed, or is it just mainly on what females you've crossed?
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird. You know, I can make a cross like Stogie's litter. Stogie's real tight on the ground, but there's some of Stogie's litter mates open way too much for me. Mm-hmm. You know, we made that cross two times too, and there's some out of that cross I couldn't hunt because I don't like the dog barks a lot, and they bark way too much for me, and they're out of the same cross. And I've seen that out of a lot of cross. You know, somehow this cross might be a little tighter, and a full litter mate might bark too much.
I'll ask you a question on that. Do you think that's what he's reproduced, or do you think that's how the handler trained him? Because we all know how a lot of guys train loose barking dogs by holding them back and stuff. You think that's what Shaq's reproduced?
Some of these was, he produced from, some of these I hunted with, you know, from pups. You know, they didn't leave you barking, but when they got struck, they just barked too much for me. You know, I like the dog just opens here and there and drifts around and moves.
I was sitting here thinking, in my mind, your ideal dog, you're looking for that dog. It opens. Next time you hear him bark, he's 100 yards in front of him, but it took him, it took him 20 seconds to get there, and he's covering ground.
Yes, that's what I like. You know, I don't like a dog to get struck before he knows where the coon went. I hate to be hunting a dog and he get struck, and he's in the same 50-yard circle for 5 minutes before he gets it lined out. I want him to have it lined out when they go to open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I like the drifting style dogs. Bark once at 100, once at 250, one at 5 or 6, and then locate and done.
Yes, and I like a dog when he locates that I can train. I've got to have one. Not so much anymore because everything's by itself, but I want a dog when he locates his tree.
Right.
There is you don't want no second guessing at that point. He's committed.
No. Yeah. Yes, when he locates, he needs to get trained, and that's pretty much what I'm going to hunt. Not saying I've got the best, but most of my hunt, when you hear him locate, you can train him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would assume if you have a dog that's not doing that, you're culling.
Yes, I'm moving on. Yes, yeah. I'm not going to have one locating and moving and locating. I'm not going to hunt it.
I've said several times to some young guys and this and that and other, a one bark, 75% to 85% tree dog is hard to beat.
I promise you.
I mean, if he's got a big locate and you can hook him on it right off the bat, and if he's got three or four out of 10 coons, that dog's hard to beat.
Your math's off on that one, not 3 or 4 out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't.
Well, seven
out of 10. Yeah.
Johnny's our mathematician, and he screwed that one up. you can say what's 5,450,000 plus 5,450,000 again. He'll have it answered before you get
3 coons out of 10. I'm like, that ain't the dog I'm used to hunting.
I was gonna say, if he wants some of them, I got some I can sell him.
See, we cut nobody slack around here. I'm telling you, man. Johnny, hey, just is how we are. Johnny posted a new Facebook profile picture yesterday of him and his wife. And it was a good picture. It was at like a big event at her work.
Their heads was cut off.
He let their heads cut off. So we was just bashing him like crazy last night. So
I did fix it though. My wife come in. I sitting in the recliner. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Well, you've cut our heads off." And I said, "Well, honey, I was trying to get the ugliest part of me off of there for you."
Yeah, that's a good comeback.
But now, Johnny's a good math man, but he screwed that one up.
Yeah,
yes, he did.
Yes, I did. 7.5 to 8 out of 10 coons.
But now, I agree. You're going to have a hard time beating that dog. Yes, that's low.
You will.
So your opinion on that for the people that's training dogs or whatever, you just got to know when to keep it and keep going, or cut it and move on.
That's it. Don't fall in love with none of them until they make it.
Yeah, and that's the mode I've been in here recently. I've had high hopes on there. Kyle's laughing at me over there. I've had high hopes on some crosses that we've made, and I've just not seen what I wanted out of them, and I'm done.
And sometimes you just got to face the facts.
Yeah, it didn't work.
You can't have what ain't there. You can't put in a dog what they ain't got.
Yeah.
No, they're born with their ability. You might help them along, but you're not going to add to it much.
No. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's one thing we want to reiterate to these people that are listening to this podcast is, you know, pay attention to those things, and you got to make some hard decisions sometimes. I mean,
you got to know when enough's enough.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I tell these young, I don't want a lot of young, well, I call them young guys. They're my boys, age 30. I tell all of them, when you're starting to pup, a pup's either a track dog or he's not. He's born a track dog. I said, you can teach him how to tree coons, what he's out there for. But I said, I'm a firm believer. A dog is born a good track dog or he's not. You're not going to take a bad track dog and make him a great track dog. Either he's either a good one or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, do you back a couple years ago, I went up in Ohio, and like I said, that rip dog that we hunt was young, and I wanted to take him up there and get him into some thicker coons to see how he reacted. And yes. We did, and the first night, I'll just be 100% honest with you, I was like, well, where's my dog at? What happened?
Yeah.
The second night, he started rearing coons. The third night, he done better and better and better. And then the last night, my buddy was up there, and he said, all right. He said, he's rearing coons pretty consistently now. He said, let's go over here. I said, where's over here? He said, I got something for you. And I thought, what in the world's he doing to me? He took me to a cut timber thicket.
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to see what kind of track speed you got. And he said, a lot of people don't think about it. He said, but I bring them to cut over timber to increase their track speed. If they can move a track in there, when they hit the open, big open woods, he said they're twice as fast on that track coming out of that cut timber.
That's kind of what, go back to where I like to go down there in them big hills where the underbrush is horrible. It's just thick. But so if they can run and tree a coon down there and do it to satisfy you, when you get them out of there and cleaner, easier timber, they're going to look way better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, do you have I've heard people have different deadlines on dogs. They need to be treated in 8 minutes. They need to be treated in 10 minutes. Do you kind of succumb to that theory, or do you have a different theory on that?
No, I go on. Now, if I got a dog, I'm one. Now, if the dog's in there hung up in an area, they don't have very long. I'll be in there, send them out of there. But if a dog's running and moving a track, he can't make that coon climb. You know, that coon's going to climb when he wants to. But if I got a dog that's running it and moving it good, I'm going to let him free that coon. But now, if I got a dog in there that's hung up, and can't figure out where to go with it, it's not going to take me very long. I'm going to be in there whipping him out of it.
You're going to get him on something that better that he can handle easier.
Yeah, he either needs to swing on out there and pick it up, or go find a whole different track.
So you base that tree time on how that dog's handling that track. So
yes, you know, if he's moving it and running that coon, he's doing all he can do. Mm-hmm. But now if he's in there hung up and standing on his head, I can't even give him 8 minutes. It don't take me very long. I'm in there running them out of there.
So we were trying a dog out that I had. It's one of them I learned when to cut the ties, and I had high hopes for it. I was trying it out, and he was getting in there and getting bogged down, and I thought he was doing a pretty good job finally, because he just like lined it out and was gone. And I thought, okay, he's figured out it gone, but it wasn't just a minute. He was right back in there. That's when I was done. Yeah. It's like no, that's not gonna work.
No, you leave an area, that dog should never come back there.
Exactly.
You know, if he's been there once and left it on a track, he should never be back at that spot again.
Yeah, and that was pretty much at that point in time when my son looked at me and said, put that dog on the leash. I'm not turning it loose again.
Yes.
He said, it's going back to where we're driving it from. No, that's good points. I mean, you kind of get an idea of how different people think, and you know, you tend to find that these guys that are doing a good job with it, there's a lot of the same thinking going on. You got to. You just got to be hard. You got to be hard and critique hard.
If you want a good dog, you got to be hard to please. And I mean, if you ever loosen your standards, that's what you're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be picky to ever have a good dog.
No, I agree.
And a lot of people, they just they think that they can fix this or fix that, or keep going back to the same well and get the same product and keep going back instead of trying this or trying that or going somewhere else, making an outcross or doing something different improve those things. They just stuck. I don't know what their mentality is, and some of them that's just what they've always had.
Yes.
And some of them are older gentlemen that's fine with them.
Yes. You know, I've got walker dogs, but we've made some outcrosses on some English females and this and that, and I'll hunt them. You know, if they're what I'm looking for, that doesn't matter to me. I'm just looking for a good dog that I can coon hunt and enjoy and go win with.
Right. And you got to be, I mean, some people just have a hard time being honest with themselves because it's out of such and such, or it's out of this, or out of that. They have a problem just being honest and say, this is not going to work. I need to find something different.
Yep.
Now I got a thought on this about crossing, and I know what you're going to say before I ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So Shaq has got, we just talked about it, a lot of puppies.
Yes.
Everbreed's got their, they've got their bloodlines that they like, and I'm doing this because obviously we're blue tick men. I think blue tick guys are probably the worst of every breed there is that we get. We're hung up on a line and we don't want to get away from it, and that's what happens with them.
Yes.
Out of your stuff, the Walker guys, and I think Shaq would be a perfect example of that. You don't see one line of dogs come, because you've already mentioned off several how they cross well. They don't get line bloodline, yeah, or kennel blind, what I'll call it, to a certain line, yeah, of Walkers. They're coming from all over, aren't they?
Yes, and they'll breed anything.
Right.
You know, they're just wanting a good dog. And I got a lot of friends that are blue dog guys, and I tell them, blue dog guys, to me, are probably the worst of not breeding out of their own bloodline.
Yep. And that's why I'm fessing up to that. We are, as a whole. It's probably the worst of all the breeds.
And I'm a blue dog guy. I always have been, and I like a blue dog. But it got to where it was just so hard to find one that had the drive and stuff. You know, I was talking earlier before we come on about Corey Mills and them. Even, you know, when I was a kid, young, their dogs hunted hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they flew around. They had a lot of hustle. It was tough. And it's just hard to find one anymore, a blue dog that got that.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the past, 25, 30 years, if you was a blue dog guy, you had about three or four different ways of, I'll call, yes, it cliques or breeds, families, whatever you want to call it. That's, you went one of them ways. So you was either, you was a hammer man, a jet man, a Utchman man, or a Rambo man. I mean, there was, nobody was getting that. They stayed true to that. And that's, I think we're learning. I think we're coming around, yeah, right now, because we've been getting beat for so long, and people starting to step out a little bit and breeding winners to winners. And Kyle says that all the time.
Yeah, especially what I've seen a lot listening and stuff to a lot of the blue dogs. Like, we hunt a more of a fly around style blue, yeah, dogs. I mean, Snap, she's a bushwhacking style. She flies around. I mean, she's moving 14, 15 mile an hour consistently, yeah, on the Garmin. But
yes,
I hear a lot of these guys, they're culling dogs like that. They said they move too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're the ones that are culling. Well, then when, yeah, you get in a situation like we've got her, you know, it's hard to find many male dogs out there that's her type style to breed to, because you, mm-hmm, want to keep recreating that,
mm-hmm,
to push forward.
Yeah, there's, in my opinion, they can't move too fast. I don't care how fast they're moving if they're tree and coon. I mean, hustle is what you got to have.
Hey, if they're moving fast enough, if they run over one, they're going to be on another one in just a minute.
They'll find another one. That's it. That's what I tell everybody about Stogie. He's probably not, he's not the best dog out there, but he's one of the hustlingest dogs out there. And when you're at 500, he's going to be at 1,000. So he's getting good coons. You could probably treat quicker than him, but he's getting there so much faster than you are. It makes him look pretty good.
Yep.
And that's the name of the, that's, I mean, a lot of people don't think about it. That's the name of the game. You got to, the first coon out of the truck, you got to do it quick.
Yes.
Yep. And if it don't matter if it's 200 or if it's 50 yards or if it's half a mile, you got to do it fast, because
you got to get treed. And I tell these young boys that hunt with me, I tell them, I said, there's a lot of dogs that can tree that first coon. But I said, you got to really work on that recutting, and your dog's got to recut just like he does out of the truck. Because I said, when it comes down to that second, third, and fourth coon, there's a lot of dogs that just don't go tree them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what sets good from great.
That, you know, you got to have a dog, when you recut him, he left just like you did when you cut him out of pickup.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you was talking about, you hunt a lot. There's no dog, very few dogs are going to do that if they're not getting that 4, 5, 6 nights a week. And like you said, yeah, Thursday night, you hunt all night, because, yes, you're working on those things.
Yep.
So that makes, yeah, sense.
I said a dog's just like an athlete. You don't see these professional athletes practicing one night a week and then going to a game on Saturday and being a professional. You know, everybody else, if they're getting out work, they're not at the top no more.
No, and that's something that's rare in dogs, of that third and fourth coon. Take, for instance, the finals of the Tournament of Champions last year, not this previous one, the one year before, went out. It was the last, 10, 15, 20 minutes of that hunt. He trees 2 to 3 coons just, I mean, flying off that recut. That's what great is right there.
That's
99% of dogs out there wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, most people would have never bet on, other than the fact that they, knowing who was handling, they know he's probably packing a real dog. But just watching how that hunt was coming together, you would have never thought he was going to be the dog that win it. And then, like you said,
you wouldn't have thought he had a chance after the first 30 minutes of the cast.
No, and here he turns around and does that.
Yes, yeah, that's a good dog.
Well, we watched. Which one was it? Is the world hunt that we was watching this past year? I was driving. My brother was driving, and I was watching it, so I wasn't driving and watching. But that what you just said is how them dogs was operating in that final cast. Every time they recut them, we were just sitting here like, okay, every one of them is treated in a separate spot again, and in 5 minutes are walking the trees and shining again. And as them dogs had, every time they cut them, they were gone. There was none of that lingering around and thinking about going. They's gone.
Yes, yeah. Most of them you draw anymore when on that recut, the one that's winning, they're going to go get another coon treat somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs are very accurate. You in them bigger hunts, if a dog gets treed, you pretty much can figure in your head he's plussed. He's going to have a coon.
That's something that Kyle was he's telling us. I mean, that's at the PK, was it his world hunt that was in it, and he said that's just what you got to count on. He said it's not – Are they going to have a coon? It's how fast are you going to find it and get cut on the next one? Because every one of them dogs at that level, they're not close.
Oh, yeah.
They're...
I mean, it was like Monday night, PKC World Hunt. We scored on 14 singles Monday night.
Yeah.
No dog missed a coon. I treed four singles. Two other dogs treed 3 singles, and they were treed right after the time. I mean, every single dog had a coon. And what it comes down to, I tell more people this, and it's hard for them to understand. Strike does matter in some situations. I mean, a good strike dog, don't get me wrong, it helps.
Yes.
But it's that first dog treed, it makes the world of difference. You got if you're the first dog treed with a coon.
Recut. Yeah, you get if you're the first dog treed with a coon and you're recut and got a chance to tree a second one while you're going to score them other dogs, you've got a big hand up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Even if you got that quarter strike.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that 125 makes a difference on it.
Somewhere along the line in there, some of them boys are going to get leash locked.
Most
likely.
Most of the time, yes.
That's a question I got. What's your thoughts on leash lock?
I understand why they do it, because a lot of these places don't have the, it kind of keeps the dogs a little more in pocket. But I'm a firm believer if you're going to go spend $6,500 or 20, whatever. You're there to coon hunt. Your dog needs to be loose.
It's rough to sit on the lead because a lot of times you're penalizing the dog that got treed first because he's the one sitting on the lead longer.
Most of the time, that's how it happens. I've won by it, I've lost by it, but I'd rather take my chances of my dog being loose and winning as I would leading him around.
That's especially when you start talking about those entry fees that you're dropping to.
Sucks to sit in the lead for 30. I mean, these dogs blow out. I mean, you're a mile in each direction. You're sitting in the lead for 45 minutes to an hour or the whole hunt.
And that can happen easy. You cut and you're the first dog treed. Well, you pull off. A lot of times we're going to be treed. And like you said, one's a mile to the east and one's a mile to the west. Well, the time you walk a mile in, a mile back to where you started, and then a mile back to that dog, the hunt's over.
Yeah, or if you do get a turn back loose, you're just like you started right back. You're back at square one. I mean, you've got to get another one or something. Because if you didn't have that first strike and then you blew treed right away and then you wasted all that time, you still need to get another one. You lost that hour of time to get it done.
Yes. Yep.
That is.
Yeah, that's if you're not getting struck for 100 and treed for 125 right out of the truck, a lot of times you're still going to get beat even though you're the first dog treed on a cane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something we talk about all the time, and that is a frustrating thing.
Yes.
To deal with.
Yes. So we're getting ready to start. I guess winding this episode down a little bit, but keep talking about Shaq and what he's reproduced. Anybody that's kept on the circuit right now. There's two pretty hot dogs running that are both sired by Shaq. And Cheyenne, you can correct me on this, but is this – he's the only sire to reproduce $200,000 winners in the same year, correct?
Yes.
That's what I, that's what a pretty I was big accomplishment. I mean, you look at Clyde won the – what did he win? Was it the
– Clyde won the PKC 100,000 and Ken Cup won the Pro Sport.
Same year.
Same year.
That's 200,000 pup earnings immediately. Mm-hmm. And then you take 10 Cup – well, Ward just won another truck. I mean, shocker on that.
Yeah, he's a – I think they've had Ken Cup, you know, they bought him from Shable and then Billy Bell, and they've had him at the most 4 months, I think, probably. And they've won a – yeah, I think they bought him in April. And, you know, they won two trucks and 100,000, was in the semifinals of – or I think it's the semifinals of Super Stakes.
Yeah. I mean, that's impressive. Short time frame. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Yes. That's coming quick. And that 10 Cup was it. That he is another one. He was I sold him very young to a kid in Arkansas, Dustin Burdine. But 10 Cup was one. The first night out wasn't even around the dog. Run anything that lay a track. Barked a lot, and that's one reason I sold him. I shouldn't have, but I did. But that pup was just a natural.
He might have got you something better than a Maverick.
Yes, I promise you. He's done that. Well, you might not with my hammer abilities, but someone like Ward was handling me well, I promise you.
Now, you mentioned the name there, Dustin Burdine.
Yes, sir.
Phil Davis's nephew, correct?
What's that?
He's big buddies with one of Phil Davis's nephews.
I think so, yes.
Okay, the reason why I know that is the Rip Dog that we hunt. I went to Arkansas and bought him off of Dustin when he was 15 or 16 months old. And we conversed back and forth and talked about this and that. And he's, how long did Dustin have the 10 Cup Dog?
Dustin? Probably 5-6 months, I'd say, maybe a little longer.
Okay, I was just trying to get a timeline. If that'd been about the time that I went out there and bought the Rip Dog, and then he may have got him about that same time after I bought Rip.
Yeah,
after me and Kyle bought Rip.
Yeah,
Johnny's over here calculating to see if Dustin made as bad a decision on Rip but selling him as he did 10
Cups. Two good ones.
And that's the same way with the Clyde Dog when he was a young pup. Started here, which I didn't have nothing to do with training him at all, or 10 Cup. I had him when there's pups, but Clyde was a wild, I mean, all over the country. Didn't make very many trees, but when he treed, he had a coon.
Yeah, that's what I've seen a lot on, watch a lot of his finals, and a lot of his scorecards is you don't see very many trees that dog ain't got a coon.
He's going to have a coon. That's the same way with 10 Cup. When they tree, You better, if your dog gets treed, you better tree him and not think you're not going to look at their coon.
Yeah.
I watched Clyde in a final one night, and I think he treed three coons, and I don't know if another dog in that cast treed a coon or not.
Yeah.
I think he treed all three coons that scored in that cast.
Yes.
With Mark.
Yeah, he's a good dog, and Mark's a good guy.
Yeah.
What we took a few notes there before we started what's some of the, because there's a bunch of them. I mean, what's some of the other ones that have been prominent winners?
Do you know what the mama is of 10 Cup?
Yeah, it's a female out of Tin Man and Wipeout Fuzz.
Okay. Is the 10 Cup and Clyde, are they kind of bred the same on the bottom, or are they totally different?
No, they're totally different. Yeah, they're totally different. Clyde, he's out of a female they called Birdie that went back a lot of Minkler's old stuff, Kansas Pee Wee. And all that, which all went back to dancer stuff on back.
Yeah. And then that tells the viewers right there, that shows them Shaq's reproduced $200,000 winners and two elite winners with two totally different bloodlines on the bottom side.
Yeah. They're bred nothing alike on the bottom side.
Which goes back to my blue tick guy's problem point that you got to think outside the box and quit worrying about staying in one line.
But now they you, no doubt, you breeding quality females to Shaq.
Yeah, I breed a lot of good females, but I'm one, you know, if someone calls and wants to breed, I'm not going to turn you away. You know, if they're think enough of my dog to want to breed to him, I'll breed you a female. You know, and I got a stud fee on him, but I breed a lot of females for pups.
And it goes back. I don't necessarily believe in brood, straight up just brood females, but there's a lot of dogs out there that never had the chance to run the roads like yes. some of these other dogs have, and they were just as good. And a lot of these dogs, it's how they're trained also. I mean, they may have tools that they're going to reproduce, but if you put them tools away and never bring them out, I mean...
That's exactly right.
Is there any pups or older dogs now out there out of shack that you wish you could pry them out of somebody's hands that's never going to be known about?
Yes. I know where there's a bunch of them at that I'd love to get bought, but I've tried, and you're not going to get them bought, but I wish they was in someone else's hands. You know, they're getting coon hunted, but mm-hmm. they really need to run up and down the road.
Now, that's what I was figuring. There's probably some out there, several out there that could just keep spiking those numbers north of a million.
Oh, yeah. I hope our luck keeps running.
Yeah, I'm like Jason. I think some of the blue guys are starting to think out of the box. You said you made mention that you got one. You got one out of the first platinum to platinum champion. You got
I'm buying a blue pup out of Eddie Green's Zeke dog and Henry Bliss's female.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that I've talked to Eddie some over the years here and there and yonder. I've never talked to the Blessing guy. The Roxy female, I have heard that she has a unreal mouth.
Roxy's a coon trier. She's got a real mouth, and Roxy's a real good female. Henry's a number one guy, as good as you could talk to. I mean, he's a guy, you draw him, he's going to find your coons. He takes his minuses when he's got them. He's just a good guy.
Yeah.
But I think that ought to be a real cross. She's got a lot of drive. Zeke's got a lot of drive. I think that'll be a good cross.
But that's one of the crosses in the blue tick world where it's winners to winners. I mean,
it is.
That's it.
And then there's another cross that's made that's platinum to platinum also. Crowder and
yes, I
can't remember the other female. What?
I remember reading it the other day. The one that was
I knew they made a platinum and platinum cross, but I cannot remember the female.
I know her name. Draw the blank.
Yeah, and Crowder's another one. Crowder, that's a big hunting dog.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So that's what we've got to do on the blue tick side. We got to take notes on what you Walker boys have done. And start putting it in action.
Yeah, and that's what I've told a lot of people, and it's hard for them to wrap their head around too, though, is if you're going to compete, if you want to compete with them guys, you're going to have the style of dogs that they're competing with.
Yes. You know, and I know where there's right here close to me, I know where there's a lot of good blue dogs, but most of them are owned by pleasure hunters. So, therefore, they've not been trained like a competition dog. You know, they're coon triers and would have been top-notch dogs in the hunts, but them guys didn't make them recut good and this and that. But forestry and coons, those are as good as any of their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, you said you talked about when we was off air there, we was talking about some of Corey Maley stuff and that. And Bob and Pete and all those and I know some of the dogs that you're talking about from out your way. Dennis Elderbrader used to have a dog named Rebel, and that dog could fly on a track.
Yes,
I mean he was a good track dog, and we had at the time I had Rebel's uncle here, and he was an exceptional track dog, but it's we got away from that some way a little bit and got more. Tree minded, I think, sometimes than we did on the ability to move a track and move it quick.
Yes. Dennis has got good hounds. He's got coon trails. I go up and pleasure hunt some with Dennis. He's an A number one guy, and he's got nice dogs.
He does. I've drawed him a couple times, and I drawed Rebel back in 09 or 10. And he beat me with a Rebel dog that night. But he
and Dennis is another one. He's a coon hunter. He hunts.
Mm-hmm. He does. He does.
He's a hard hunter.
He does. That's what it takes. If you're going to be at that level, you're going to have to do it. I like him, Dennis. He's a friend of mine. But he's definitely he's definitely had some good ones in his day.
Yes, yes, he has.
Well, Cheyenne, have you got any other stuff that we want to make sure we cover? We want to make sure we cover anything that you want to have pointed out.
No, I think you guys has about covered it all.
I guess the real question is, a lot of people's wanting to know, you breaking Stogie back out, or are you going to just kind of just leave him up and just study him out?
No, they ain't none of them that good. No, they're made to coon hunt.
So you don't have him under lock and key?
No, he's right out there in a pen, right by the other dogs.
He don't know how good he is, does he?
No, he's just I don't your buddy. Know how good he. About half the time, I don't know how good he is either.
Well, listen, we appreciate you coming and being on our podcast with us. And
thank you guys very much.
Yes, we appreciate you taking the time out, and it's summertime, so. We may be done before dark, so you can still get to the woods, and we won't be making you cut at midnight.
That'll be all right. I don't have to work tomorrow, so I'm good to go.
Hey, this is probably the best we've ever done. We're the world's worst to sit down and start to do these things, and next thing we look, it's 10:45 or 11:30, and we've never started hitting the button.
That's all right.
So,
like I said, we appreciate you, Cheyenne.
Hey, and, thank you guys.
We may come out and see you here before long.
Give me a call and come out and we'll go hunting.
All right. We appreciate it, Cheyenne.
All right.
We've enjoyed
thank
it.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.